We're going to be doing the book of Proverbs. We're going to continue therein. We started last week, and I want to talk about the author of Proverbs, and that's Solomon. Now, you may remember Solomon was David's son, one of David's sons, and son of Bathsheba as well, okay? And so let's see what the word says about Solomon, because we know Proverbs is a book on wisdom. And so let's see what the word says about our author here, Solomon. So go to 1 Kings, if you would. 1 Kings. And in 1 Kings chapter 3, we'll see some information here about 1 Kings 3, verse 5. Let's go to verse 5. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And in verse 6 here of chapter 3 of 1 Kings, it says, "And Solomon said, Thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in." Now, obviously, Solomon was not literally a little child, but figuratively, he is expressing great, great meekness here. "I know not how to go in or to come out. Come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Verse 11, "And God said unto him, Because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee." So, wow, that's quite a conversation that Solomon had with the Lord God, and with his meekness and his heart to serve his people, God blessed him and made him the most wise person before and after than anybody else that ever lived. So, this is Solomon. Let's go to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 9. Okay? Here in chapter 9 of 2 Chronicles, we're going to look at verse 22. And it says here in verse 22 of chapter 9, 2 Chronicles, "And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. Wow. That's pretty neat, huh? Now, a side note here that I'd like to share with you is when you read Samuel, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and Chronicles, it's interesting to note they cover kind of the same period in part, but there's an emphasis in Kings and Samuel and Kings versus an emphasis in Chronicle. And in my Bible here, the editor, I think, explains this pretty well. I'm going to read what he says in regard to these three different books and their emphasis. The books of 1st and 2nd Chronicles cover the same period of Jewish history described in 2nd Samuel through 2nd Kings, but the perspective is different. These books are no mere repetition of the same material, but rather form a divine editorial on the history of God's people. While 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings give a political history of Israel and Judah, 1 and 2 Chronicles present a religious history of the David dynasty viewpoint, and the latter from a priestly and spiritual perspective. The book of 1 Chronicles begins with the royal line of David and then traces the spiritual significance of David's righteous reign. So Chronicles gives it from a godly standpoint, where the others, Samuel and Kings, from a more human standpoint, okay? So it's kind of interesting to note that as we read these books. Now, I'm using this to talk about Samuel a little bit, but let's go to Proverbs, because that's the main book we're looking at, and I wanted to share that information about our man Solomon, so you see a background that you know that God made him a very, very wise man, okay? So let's take a look here. Tonight, I want to just look at a few points in chapter 6 and 7. And I know last week we read through some of the chapters and highlighted some of the key points and the great wisdom that's being illustrated there. But tonight, I want to just look at chapter 6 and 7 in part and highlight some points. And in doing that, I'm going to use a reference book that's by Bishop Pillai. He is an expert on Orientalisms in the Bible. And what this means is, Orientalisms is the culture of the Bible. The Bible is not a Western book with the culture we appreciate and understand. Its culture reflects an Eastern culture, okay? And Bishop Pillai grew up as a Hindu, converted to Christianity. He's from India, and he's aware of many aspects that are in the Bible that maybe to the Western mind doesn't make sense because it's an Eastern culture that the Bible is. The Bible is an Eastern culture book. And so we have really benefited greatly from Bishop Pillai in understanding some of the more difficult verses. It says in this particular book that I'm going to use, and he handles some of these accounts in Proverbs that I want to share with you. Let's see. Bishop Pillai's background and academic training gave him an unusual understanding of the Eastern mind, which is the mind of the Bible. He made a unique contribution in clarifying difficult scriptural passages and pointing up their spiritual applications. Rare gems of truth are brought to life through his works. Okay, so let's take a look at Proverbs, some of these points in chapter 6 and 7, and then I'm going to read from his book to help explain what's going on. So in chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself and make sure thy friend." So what's going on here? What are we talking about when we talk about surety and striking the hand? And this is Bishop Pillai sharing the Orientalism of these verses here. He says, "My son, if thou," verse 1, "if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger." He explains this. This is quite oriental and should be explained. You know what surety is? If you go to a bank and sign for a loan for a friend or co-sign on his note, that is surety. That's what it means here. At the bank, you have to sign a form, but in the East, you don't have to sign anything if you want to be a surety. In the East, you simply strike hands. The lender asks if you want to be a surety. When you say, "Yes, certainly I will be a surety," he says, "Then strike my hand." He puts out his hand and you strike his palm with your own. Then you become surety. You haven't signed anything, but you can't go back on it when you have struck palms. So it goes on, "The parent's advice, my son, if you have stricken hands with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth," verse 2 here. "Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth." In other words, you are stuck with it. Why can't you go back on it? Well, it's like a vow. When Orientals strike hands, it's a very solemn thing. You say the words, but you make sure you will do it when you strike hands. That seals your word. And the editor's note here, and we understand this, the American custom of shaking hands to seal a bargain is quite similar to striking hands described above. And at one time it had the same unbreakable quality. I mean, it used to be you shook hands with somebody on a deal, that was it. You know, you didn't have to sign a bunch of papers or anything like that. But nowadays, now you got to have lawyers and notary and all kinds of paperwork in writing. Oh, yes. So that's what we have today, and that's kind of what they're talking about here. Well, verse 3, he goes on to share, "Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself when thou art come into the hand of thy friend. Go humble thyself and make sure thy friend." This is the advice, he explains. You can't break your vow, but maybe you can be released from it. You can go to your friend, apologize to him, and say, "I'm sorry I promised to be a surety. I'm sorry I struck hands and I want to withdraw from it. Will you release me from it?" And that's what you do. Hopefully your friend will abide by that. But what's the wisdom here? Is maybe not get involved in a surety, okay? Co-signing for people. And if you do, not a bad idea to get out of it.
It puts it really well in the NLT verse 3.
Yeah, NLT.
It says, follow my advice and save yourself, for you have placed yourself at your friend's mercy. Now swallow your pride, go and beg to have your name erased.
That's good. That's good. Well, let's jump to verse 12. There's an interesting point here in verse 12 of chapter 6. A naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. Now, a froward in the King James here is a perverse, wicked mouth. He winketh, verse 13, he winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teaches with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He devises mischief continually, he soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly, suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. So what does it mean, he winketh with his eyes? I mean, you know, we might wink at somebody just to have fun or whatever, but in the East, it's a whole different ball game here. And Bishop Pillai makes this comment. He winketh with his eyes. Only naughty people, wicked people, wink with their eyes. I've seen it all over the world. When you are talking with someone and you wink at a friend who is standing nearby, you are telling your friend, I don't mean what I'm saying to this fellow. I'm putting him on. I'm lying to him. When you wink, your friend understands that you don't mean what you are saying. Only wicked people do this. Why? Because they say one thing and mean another. So that's what this winking is about. We might not think it's that a deal, but it's, in the Eastern culture, it's not very nice at all. So, in verse 16, this is an interesting point here. And I don't have any comments here by Bishop Pillai, but I'd like to share this, verse 16. And in here, they point out six things that the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination unto him. So not a bad idea to find out what doesn't God like. And here they are. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. Wow. Then he goes on to say, verse 20, my son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thy heart, and tie them about thy neck. Yes, we learn good things from our folks. Want to hold on to them. Well, I want to jump to chapter 7, because I'm just pointing out a few things in these chapters here. So go to chapter 7, if you would. In verse 1, it says, my son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Stay unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call up understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. Okay, first of all, what does it mean here that we want to keep the commandments, God's word, and my law as the apple of thine eye? What does it mean? How do we keep something that's the apple of thine eye?
First, you're going to obey.
Well, this is what Bishop Pillai, in this figure of speech or Orientalism, how he explains this. He says, the apple of thine eye is the pupil of the eye. Okay? Right in the middle of the eyeball. See how carefully placed that pupil is. How centered it is. How secure it is. How sure it is. So we should keep his law and his commandments, both of which have been taught. The apple, pupil of the eye, you can't block it out. You can't shake it. You can't move it in this way or that way. It is firmly fixed. So must the commandments and the counsels which you receive be firm and deep. So when you recognize the pupil of your eye is in the center there, it's not going anywhere, it's right in the middle, you want to keep it firmly fixed. And that's, you know, the understanding of that point where we keep the law as the apple of our eye. Now, what is this thing about a strange woman? And we see this term used quite a bit in the Proverbs. We read it last week a little bit. And this strange woman is a woman of prostitution. Okay? I mean, we can kind of see here that they may keep thee, verse 5, from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. And we could continue to read here about these influences of the strange woman. You know, it goes on, verse 11, she is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house, because she's in somebody else's house. Mm-hmm. She is without. So it's interesting to note that in Proverbs, this is mentioned a number of times. So, guys, stay away from strange women. Prostitutes. There's a lot of downfall that will occur as a result. Now, it's interesting to note that Solomon saying this, unfortunately, succumbed to this. And I thought, as wonderful as Solomon is in writing this book, he had his downfall. And we're not all perfect. Solomon was not perfect. He was really great for many, many, many years. But at the end of his life, he had a great downfall. And I want to share that with you. I think we need to be honest and see what the Word says about this. We can learn both ways here. So 1 Kings, if you want to look with me there or listen. But in 1 Kings, it talks about Solomon's latter days in chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And it goes on to say he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Malcolm, the abomination of the Ammonites, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. And it goes on saying what he did. Verse 9, and the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. So God evidently worked with him two different times to correct it. And unfortunately, Solomon didn't change. But we certainly are blessed that he provided and God worked within him to provide a wonderful book of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. Okay? All right. Well, we'll continue on with the book of Proverbs as we have fellowships, Wednesday night fellowships, and we'll see what great gems of wisdom we can learn. Okay?